Blog Talk Radio.
You know what time it is, right? Party starts. Oh yeah, here we go.
The champ is here.
The champ is here. Look at franchise. That's what we're doing. Man, welcome, of course, to another Explosive Talking Sports with the 12 Man. This is how we do every Tuesday, pretty much every Tuesday. But, of course, today is April the 7th. Man, it's flying by, and you are officially talking sports with the 12 Man. Of course, I am Andre Peterson, your point guard for this audition. Off to my co-hosts, let's kind of kick it off and check in with them. Number one, got to check in with my guy in Louisiana, Mr. Robert Ford. How you doing, sir?
Man, what's happening? Doing great. Ready to talk some sports.
I always expect Rob to come in like hot and hearty. Like, he kind of pauses and like, I'm doing great. Everything is fantastic. It's all good. What about the champ is here, Jaquan? JQ, how you doing today, sir?
Oh, man, I'm good. Living life. I just got done watching UConn win number 10, man. That's crazy.
You guys sound
man,
like Bo Ryan, man. You guys sound like you're kind of upset, man, kind of low-key. But anyway, it's a fun night, man. So anyway, let's kick the show off as we always do. We always like to give out some show information if you want to call into the show. The course number to call into the show is 424-243-9519. We are also available in social media in that world. We always do a fantastic job. We'll have to get JQ some access to so he can start posting as well. But if you want to do that, if you go to our Twitter, which is at the number 12, THMAN Sports. That's where we are. And then finally, we are on Facebook. If you go to facebook.com/12manSports, or if you put in Talking Sports and 12 Man, you actually find us, and that is what we do. But, guys, fellas, we got an explosive night in America. Let's go ahead and kick this off. We got a lot of topics to discuss. And our first topic, of course, obviously, we had the championship game for the men for the NCAA. And, talk about a pretty impressive win. I thought that Wisconsin was going to actually pull it off, and then I guess they started to play a little conservative, and then Duke pulled it off. So I guess I'll kick it to JQ. What did you think about that win last night, sir?
I was thoroughly impressed with the guard play by Duke. Tyus Jones and Grayson Allen coming out of nowhere, just basically putting Duke on their back in that second half when Okafor couldn't really get anything going against Kaminsky. That was very impressive, but anytime you talk about the tournament, you always talk about it's a guard tournament, and the guard stepped up big last night for Duke, and number five for Coach K. I mean, I don't really like Duke like that, but you got to give them their respect. They pulled out another one. They know how to show the grit and win down the stretch, and it was just another classic Duke performance.
Let's go to somebody that actually loves Duke. Let's go to Mr. Robert Ford. How you doing, Robert Ford?
As they say, a lie don't care who tells it.
he's the biggest North Carolina fan in the side of the world. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, well, obviously, JQ obviously said it best. The Duke guard play, Tyus Jones, stole the show last night. He was incredible, clutch shots. Took over the game down the stretch. I also got to credit Duke's defense, too. Their defense was tremendous here in the last 10 minutes of the ball game. Wisconsin, I think, got a little tired, and Duke's bench was a lot deeper. And Mike Krzyzewski did an incredible job with their rotation, keeping their guys fresh, and they were able to prevail in the end of the game. But definitely the guard play, Tyus Jones and Allen taking over the game, along with Duke's defense, I thought was the key to them winning that championship.
Anytime you have good guard play, you seem to go pretty far in the tournament. This was an actual game where, you know, the big men actually had a huge, impact. Obviously, you know, Jahlil Okafor can go number one. That's number one pick. Like I said, I think Wisconsin, man, they started to play small. If they kept feeding it to Frank the Tank, who knows what would have happened. I know he was part of the controversial thing earlier, too, but just a very impressive we're not going to talk about that too much, but just a very impressive game like we talked about too, guys. And I'm going to take a step back too, because I got to be honest. I actually watched that I Hate Christian Leitner, and I'm actually going to, as much as it pains me, I'm actually going to give them the respect, too, because, you know, we were hating them just because we just didn't understand, but that's a whole other show topic, too. But just a great game. You got to give Coach K credit for talking about that as well, because he's actually won in a lot of different decades, guys, and we'll definitely touch base on that, too. But, you know, that's my little thoughts about the situation, too. And as we talk about Coach K being good at, go ahead, J.K., go ahead, sir.
I was going to say, before we jump into that, can I just one more thing? It seemed to me that Wisconsin, even though it's a championship game, it seemed like it was almost a little bit of a letdown for them coming off that big win over Kentucky. They seemed a little flat in the beginning, and they had some spurts where they got some energy, but they didn't play with that consistent energy they played with against Kentucky. It was almost like that was their championship game, and they had to get back up for this game, even though it was a championship game, if that makes sense. So, you know, a lot of the shots I saw, they were hitting the front rim consistently, which leads me to believe, you know, tired legs are not bringing a lot of energy to the court. So I wonder about that some, too. I mean, I know they're not going to use that as an excuse, but it seemed like they just had a trouble getting up for it, which it seems crazy because it's a championship game. But when you pull off that big upset against Kentucky, I think they had the hardest part of getting back up, where Duke kind of cruised a little bit in the second half over Michigan State, and they were able to conserve a little bit and then come out with that fire and that passion last night.
What do you think about that, Rob? Do you think the same thing?
Oh, I mean, it's definitely a very good point. And I think more than anything, you put a lot of energy into that Kentucky win, and you can see down in the last 10 minutes of that game, Wisconsin was exhausted. They didn't have the depth that Duke had, and obviously Wisconsin had to put a lot more energy to their win on Saturday. Plus, they played in a late game on Saturday, where Duke played in an early game, too. A lot of people don't think that makes a difference, but it does. And plus, Duke had a big lead, like JQ said. And Wisconsin was tired in the last 10 minutes of the game. And Duke, and I think Coach K realized that. He told his team, we're going to stay patient with our rotation. We'll wear them down in the end. And he was right on. He was spot on with that one. They just wore down Wisconsin. Wisconsin just didn't have the depth that Duke had, nor the talent. When you really look at it, they didn't really have the talent that Duke had either. And it just wore on them by the end of the game.
You know, that's interesting because for Wisconsin, and both you guys made some good points, I think, JQ, I think emotionally, like you said, I think they were drained from playing Kentucky. But, Rob, wouldn't Duke saying that eight is enough? So, basically, they only went in with, like, eight players, so they had to keep that rotation strong. So, I don't know if you heard about that as far as the depth for Duke. Man, they just stayed patient. And we'll talk about the officiating in the game, too, because there's a lot of players in foul trouble, and then still they were able to somehow kind of pull this game off, which is why, once again, you got to give a lot of credit to Duke because, you know, they lost some players for obviously for a scandal, Rasuj Solomon, whatever, but he can't say eight is enough, and they pulled it off. So, like you said, good coaching, good rotations, but, you know, maybe it was a combination of Wisconsin kind of being emotionally drained, if you will. So that's my little 5 cents on that, guys. Everybody is quiet. I love it. Let's kind of talk about this, guys, too, because the biggest thing we want to talk about is Coach K. Should he be considered one of the greatest coaches of all time over John Wooden? And I think, Robert, you put this in there to kind of like kind of make it something, you know, very controversial here. Obviously, it's tough now because John Wooden's got the 10 championships, but you know, I think he's probably a very, very close second, only because of the fact that he's won in a lot of decades. You know, we remember Duke going back in time whenever I was growing up, all of us were growing up, and then he's won with different sets of players, from the Christian Leitners, the players, into the one and dones that we're in now, and he's won consistently. So got to give credit to Duke, guys.
Well, this is, I'm not a Duke fan. I think everyone knows that, but, I give credit where credit is due. And Coach K is I'm going to put him right on par with John Wooden, and I'm going to tell you why. It was a lot easier to win 10 championships back in the day. If you all know, back in the day, the tournament was set up to whereas only the conference champions made it to the tournament. And so, you only needed about 3 or 4 wins to win a title. And now you have to get 6 or 7 wins mainly six wins to win a championship. So it's a lot harder now. And like I said, for me to say this is saying a lot because I hate Duke. But Coach K, I mean, even though he's got five less titles than John Wooden, I'm going to put him right on par with Wooden. He's got more wins, but also is a lot tougher to go through a tournament this day and age than it was before. And you got to realize, too, once again, only the conference champions made it. And just think about it. There are only about five or six power conferences. So, you know, just think about how many good teams that didn't make the tournament back in the day. So you didn't have to go through a lot of good teams to really win the national championship. Not knocking what John Wooden did. Winning 10 championships is incredible. But it's a lot harder to go through it now because, you got a lot, the competition is stiffer. Recruiting is stiffer. And so I'm going to put him right on par with John Wood.
JQ?
Well, I'm going to take your argument and coming from a different vantage point and put him under John Wood in the fact that he has more wins, but they play more games now, for one, so he has more opportunity to win more games. And I think it makes it harder when you have to win your conference to get in because, you know, if you get a good run now towards the end of the season, you can still get in as that fifth, sixth, seventh seed and not win your conference. But having to win your conference just to get an opportunity to play for the title, I think that makes it harder to actually win the title because it makes every regular season game count so much more because you have to win those games in order to win the conference to get in. So not to knock what Coach K has done because, I mean, it speaks for itself. But I put him right underneath John Wooden. But, you know, 10 titles in 12 years and having to win your conference just to get an opportunity to play for the title, I think that speaks a lot of volumes too. So, I mean, you're talking, you know, 1A, 1B, but I'm just going to go with Wooden a little bit higher than Coach K right now.
But you got to realize that Pac-8 was a very weak conference back in the day too. And, you know, it wasn't as strong as the ACC, wasn't as strong as the Big Ten back in those days, nor the SEC. The Pac-8 was a horrible basketball conference outside of UCLA. So it didn't take much for them to win the conference tournament when the conference was very weak in the first place. And, you know, they only had eight teams back in that day as well in that conference. So it was a horrible basketball conference outside of UCLA.
This is Bill Walton, Robert Ford. I disagree with that statement wholeheartedly.
Plus, he had the best players.
Yeah, he kept getting good players. Go ahead, JQ. What were you about to say real quick, sir?
I was going to say, I don't disagree with that, but that still keeps the pressure on you to keep getting those good players and to keep producing because it's hard to be Goliath every year and everybody gunning from you. You're going to get everybody's best shot. So, yeah, he didn't have the strength of conference that, like you said, the ACC or the Big Ten had, but it's still something to be said for winning your conference year out and then going and actually making it to the tournament and winning the tournament. So 10 titles in 12 years, I think, you know, speaks for itself. But, I mean, you can quibble over, you know, these two, but you're talking about two legends in the sport. So you can go either way.
Well, absolutely.
Argument, I think.
And, you know, don't get it twisted. I'm not knocking what John Wooden accomplished. This is an incredible accomplishment. And but I think my point is just from the standpoint of it's a lot harder now than it was back then, you know, for John Wooden. So, I, you know, it's a difference of opinions, but I will put them right on par.
So let's ask this question. This is a little side topic question, but if you are a AD for a school, do you want the Kentucky type of team where you're getting a lot of one-and-dones, a lot of high school, a lot of recruits, blah, 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 blah? Or do you prefer the Bo Ryan method, getting those players that stay for 4 years, even the Duke, you know, for example, you know, to kind of like stay, you know, steady with the race, having the players develop and then kind of have that consistency. So, JQ, what would you do if you're 80? Which route would you prefer to go?
I mean, if you're going to give me, you know, 6 to 10 McDonald's All-Americans every year, I'm going to go that route. I mean, I understand what you're saying. It helps to build some continuity in your program to have those, you know, those four-year seniors or at least juniors before they come out. But if you're going to give me that type of talent and I can sell down my program, I can get a top-tier coach, I'm not going to dissuade my coach from going that style in the recruiting if he can get away with it. Everybody can't get away with it or they would do it. So I'm going to go with that. And plus, you never know. It's going to be finicky depending on what the NBA does in terms of the one-and-done rule, because if that changes, then you may not have that same stipulation in progress. But if I can get McDonald's All-Americans every year at the level that Calipari is getting them, I'm going to say go for it. I'm not going to knock your hustle.
Robert Ford, what do you think about this topic, sir?
Well, obviously, you got to recruit the stars. You got to get the stars into your program, number one. And so from that standpoint, I agree with JQ. But I would like to have a couple of middle-of-the-road players that can stick around for 3 to 4 years. So every year when you're bringing in those new stars, you still have some kind of veteran leadership on your team. You know, for example, that Calipari team, the one that he did win a championship with in 2012 with Anthony Davis, and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, a lot of people forget they had a senior on that team by the name of Darius Miller, who played a key role on that team. You know, he gave that team some veteran leadership to go with those five freshmen that he had. So keep bringing the studs in, but if you can keep one or two players around that can stay in your program and provide that veteran leadership, I think that's the perfect blend for your program.
I wouldn't disagree with that. Yeah, but the only piece of that is sometimes you have some of those McDonald's All-Americans that declare for the draft that really shouldn't. So it's also about a balance of telling the kid, hey, why don't you stay and try to become a top five pick as opposed to being, you know, a late lottery, you know, 18 to 20 pick in the first round. Yeah, it's the first round, but if you stay around and hone your game, you can move up. So you have to do a little bit of both of a salesman to get them there, but also to say it's better for you to maybe pass on that, you know, pick 19 contract when you can get that pick 5 contract in a year or two. So you can do both. It's a delicate balance that you have to have.
Yeah.
Well,
but, you know, nowadays, if you really look at the history of the drafts, and you can look at this even from the NFL and the NBA standpoint, guys are being graded more so today on potential than what they actually are at that particular moment. And whether the guy stays a year, whether he stays, a lot of times a guy's draft position does not change. Whether when you really look at it from the last 5 to 10 years, there's very few players that their draft status actually increase. I don't want America to misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm all about your kid going to school and graduating. But a lot of times the kids their draft grade does not change by coming back to school. And sometimes it may even hurt your draft position.
Sometimes.
Good call. Well, like I said, the whole purpose of this is that I proved my point. Looks like JQ wants to be Calipari. Like, he wants to have that. And, no, I'm just giving you a hard time. No, but, you know, I kind of agree a little bit, you know, like Robert said, too. Definitely you want to build up that program. You know, obviously, if you keep getting the one and dones and stuff like that, yeah, you're going to make a splash, but do you have enough, do you have that veteran leadership to actually pull off and win a championship, too? Because at the end of the day, those guys, they kind of, like, got lost in the moment. If you had somebody that was kind of a veteran guy, they'd probably pull them in. They may have had a chance to play for the championship versus Duke. So, you know, anyway, that's my little two cents. And even having a player that goes for 4 years that can mold them and mold the younger guys that this is what you need to win. You know, I think that's definitely something that you have to, you know, keep account for sure.
Well, you know, you go back to the Fab Five from Michigan. A lot of people forget this, too.
Yeah.
Like I said, I have nothing against having the five All-Americans on your team. But if you can just have one or two guys that's going to provide some kind of veteran leadership. I don't know if you guys remember the name Eric Riley, 7-foot big man from Michigan. You know, he provided some veteran leadership to those Fab Five, too. So you just to have one or two of those guys to go with your five All-Americans that can just, provide a steadily hand and provide some kind of veteran leadership.
It was great to watch the Fab Five. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but just the one last point on that is that Kentucky may end up having that because I think the Harrison twins should stay. So they may end up getting that veteran leadership. If they stay another year, they'll be juniors. So he might end up getting that while he's recruiting McDonald's All-American. So I'm going to let his cycle play out. So it might end up working out that way.
Exactly.
Yeah,
well, like I said, the one championship he had those five freshmen, but he also had that senior in Darius Miller who played a key role on that championship team. And that's a good point. Those Harrison twins, they should come back to school because neither one of them is a projected first-round pick. One of them is projected not to be drafted at all, and one of them is borderline if he may go a late second round at this current moment. But based on my sources, look like both of them may go because of the controversy that they're involved in right now, but they should stay in school.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to leave that one alone tremendously because we don't want to get into that. America too. Rob, did the officials cost Wisconsin the game?
No. And like I said, I'm not a Duke fan. So, I mean, but I think we both said already the guard play for Duke and Duke's defense won that game. Were there some questionable calls? I think the officiating in the Final Four was bad all around. You really look at it closely, but I don't think it cost Wisconsin the game. Duke won the game with their guard play, their defense down the stretch, and they handled their rotation very well. That's what won Duke the game, not the officiating.
JQ?
Yeah, just quickly, I totally agree with that because Wisconsin had a 9-point lead about halfway through that second half, and then they just went empty and absolutely cold from the offensive end. So they didn't help, the officials didn't help them any, but they had every opportunity to win that game, and they could have made some plays where they didn't make the play. So you just have to tip your hat off to Duke. They played a good game.
We'll let Robert off the hook, and he's been showing a lot of love for Duke, and we're going to let him off the hook too. So let's switch some gears here, and let's talk about some football here. And, you know, football is king, like we always say. Will USC be playing for the national titles in football again? And, you know, obviously they went through a little probationary period. Are they going to make a comeback? And I guess we're going to throw this to JQ. What do you think about this? So hopefully you're ready for this.
Yeah, I think so. And the reason why I think so is they just have such a fertile recruiting area in the state of California. For me, you have the Southeast, which is, I think is number one in terms of recruiting talent. And then you have Texas, I think is really big in recruiting. And then California falls in that second or third tier with Texas just behind the Southeast. So given all the talent they have out there, if they can nail the right coach, and I kind of like Sarkisian, if they gave him a chance now that he's off of the sanctions from the Pete Carroll era, that they should have an opportunity to move back up, because if he can just, you know, lock down some of those recruits in California and bring them to USC, they're going to have a great opportunity.
We have about 8 minutes, Rob. What do you think about this too, sir?
Oh, absolutely. They will be back competing for national titles again. I don't think it's going to be this coming season in 2015, but just watch them in 2016. But they're still going to be a fairly good team this coming season. I think Cody Kessler is has an outside chance of being a Heisman candidate. I mean, he's got a 59-12 TD-INT ratio. They lose Nelson Aguilar, who I think is a sleeper when it comes to wide receivers in this draft. I think he can be a pretty good NFL prospect.
Yeah.
They lose Buck Allen as well, and I think they may have I think they will feel the hurt from Buck Allen more than they will Nelson Aguilar, because they're going to be loaded at wide receiver this coming season with Juju Smith. They're going to be pretty deep at wide receivers, but they still got some questions along the O-line and D-line. They got some youth at those positions, but they do have some young talent that's ready to play. But would they be ready to play this year? I think 2016 is going to be the year where they're going to be back to competing for the Pac-12 title and possibly for a national title.
Wow.
Absolutely agree.
All right. Can Oregon still be dominant without a guy named Marcus Mariota? Rob, what do you think about this, sir?
I think this year they're still going to be the favorite to win the Pac-12. And, I mean, they got a quarterback, transfer, Vernon Adams, coming from Eastern Washington, passed for over 10,000 yards, over 1,200 yards rushing. They accounted for 121 touchdowns. Obviously, it is coming from Eastern Washington, so that would be somewhat of a concern. They still need to develop that secondary. They're going to lose Ifo Ipre Alomo. I think he's going to be a second-round pick in this draft. But they still are loaded with a lot of young talent on this team. They got to reload in the O-line and D-line. But I think they're still going to be the favorite to win the Pac-12 this coming season. I don't know about after that. I think USC will be ready to catch them. But I think they're still going to be the favorite to win the Pac-12 this current season.
Thank you.
I love the name dropping. I agree. I mean, when you're banking on a transfer from Eastern Washington, the fact that he had to go to Eastern Washington, no knock to Eastern Washington, but if he could have played at Oregon all of this time, he would have been there. So I don't know if they can stay at that level of dominance. I mean, it's hard to keep that level of dominance up, but I think they have a good thing going there because they are swiping a lot of good players out of California too, stealing them from USC and UCLA. So I think they can still be an upper echelon team, but to say they'll still be that dominant, I'll take a wait-and-see attitude or approach to that, but I don't really think so.
They're waiting for the next guy to be transferred in from playing baseball, so you know, so that plays out for sure. Will Mississippi State have a letdown this year in the SEC West? I'm going to say no because they still got Dak Prescott, but, you know, this is curious. I'm going to start with JQ. What do you think about this one, sir?
Well, in the SEC West, the only two teams that I expect to be dominant every year is Alabama and LSU. So to say they'll have a letdown, they probably will have some semblance of a letdown, but you hit the nail on the head. When you have a quarterback like they have in Dak Prescott, and I like Coach Mullins, and you have your QB coach relationship set up, I think you have a chance to still be good, but I don't know if they'll have that same level of success. And I think LSU, shout out to Rob, is going to rebound. They have a lot of young players there in LSU that are going to, you know, Fournier, I think, is going to be a stud at running back. And the quarterback situation will probably work itself out because they got some good talent there. So I think they'll take a step back because of the powerhouses coming back to where they should be. Well, not Alabama's been there, but LSU coming back up. So somewhat of a letdown, but, I mean, they still win 8 to 9 games and still go to a good bowl game. So, I mean, for Mississippi State, that's a good year. Let's not get carried away.
Gotcha. Shout out to Rob, too, because I don't know why LSU can't get a quarterback, but that's a whole other conversation, too. Rob, will Mississippi State have a letdown this year? They get all the running backs in the world. They can't seem to get a quarterback. Rob, what do you think about Mississippi State here?
Yeah, I agree with JQ here. They're going to have a letdown this coming season. I mean, they do have, as you all mentioned, Dak Prescott will be back. But they're losing a lot of starters. I mean, they're only going to return 4 starters on offense. They're losing most of the offensive line. They're losing their stud running back and Josh Robinson. They lost the defensive coordinator. He left to go to Florida, so they got to work in a new D coordinator. They lose 3 of the top 4 tacklers on the defensive line. Plus, they got to replace the All-American linebacker, who I believe is going to be a second-round pick in his NFL draft. Bernardrick McKinney was their stud linebacker. They lose him as well. So they're losing a lot of talent off of this team outside of Dak Prescott. I think he will keep them steady. As JQ mentioned, 8-9 wins, I think, at best for this team this season. But I think if they do take a step down this coming season.
The only way they'll have a letdown is if Dak Prescott keeps going to rap concerts, but that's a whole other conversation as well. but you guys got that reference. I love it, man. Oh, man, we got about 2 minutes
yeah.
to throw you something seconds. I'm glad. Rob, I guess we'll go ahead and set it up for the OT portion. I know we definitely have to continue on with a couple of topics as far as the greatest defensive lineman and kind of moving to the NFL side, but go ahead and wrap up the show, Rob, as we get ready to get focused on the OT portion, sir.
Man, I tell you what, time flies when you're having fun, people. That was the fastest 30 minutes on radio. We pretty much covered college basketball season. They got the little spring football for college football, previewing a few teams. Maybe we'll keep that going all the way into the start of regular season here. So you definitely want to stay tuned to our upcoming shows. We'll be back on the air next Tuesday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard. For our friends in Hawaii, aloha, that's going to be 5 p.m. You don't want to miss us on next Tuesday night. We're getting ready to go into our OT portion. Unfortunately, we can't get that to you live. So definitely if you get some time during the daytime tomorrow, we got a little NFL talk. If you want to hear about some NFL prospects and what your teams might do in the NFL draft, you definitely want to tune into this OT portion on tomorrow. It will be exciting and fun. So you don't want to miss it. Click on the same link, and you can get that information on tomorrow. You don't want to miss it.
And also shout out to Opening Day, too, man. We had Opening Day. I know we know what kind of rules the roost here, but a lot of fun games in Major League Baseball. So maybe we'll kick off some topics, too. Obviously, time is short, too, but a lot of fun, and it's always a time that signifies spring is here. So a little shout out for that, too. JQ, you want to say anything as we wrap up the OT portion, sir? Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Let's go Reds. Good night, America. Let's get in some baseball. I love it.
A little shout-out. I love it, too. I love it. You know, we know we got Roberts, a Yankees fan, too, so we'll leave him alone, too, as far as that, too.
Oh, Yankees.
You know, oh, man. Anyway, that's what we do. A lot of love, too. So what's what we're going to do, America?
Big red machine.
And yes, we'll sir. Keep moving as we get ready to transition to the OT portion, too. But let's get this party kicking off here. We got about 20 seconds, too, so we'll kind of tease them here. The next question, the next topic is, as we transition to the NFL, the greatest defensive lineman in the history of the NFL. That's a pretty tough question, Rob. There's a lot of different characters from too tall to Reggie White, to Leon Lett, Charles Haley. I mean, you can go a lot of different areas with this one, sir. And I guess selfishly, I was a huge fan of Reggie White. That's one of the guys that I like, you know, as far as kind of changing the way the game was played and just that club movement. That dude was just he could, you know, outrun. He was just physical. I mean, he was an amazing player, man. So that's who I say, but, you know, we're looking at different decades and whatnot too. So, you know, I don't know. That's my vote, but I guess we'll kick it to JQ and his thoughts about this, and we'll let kind of Rob wrap it up.
Oh, yep, you took the words out of my mouth. Reggie White, 198 sacks in 15 years, 13-time Pro Bowler, 8-time All-First Team NFL, and 2 Super Bowls. I mean, Reggie White was just a stud. He was a man. And I was actually watching a documentary on, I think, on the 1984 draft, and the Giants passed up on him for Zimmerman, the offensive lineman.
Ooh.
Could you imagine if the Giants had had Lawrence Taylor and Reggie White on the same defensive line?
Oh, gosh. Wow.
Yeah, they passed on him. So that would have been ridiculous. But, yeah, I'm going to go with Reggie White. Like you said, the club move, all the moves, the swim move that he perfected coming off the defensive end. I give an honorable mention to Bruce Smith from Buffalo because he leads with 200 sacks. Played a couple more years than Reggie White did, but for me, it's Reggie White.
Nice. I love it. Man, that would have, they would have, nobody would have scored anything, man, if they would have been, man. And who knows as far as how, you know, Reggie White working with Lauren, man. I shouldn't think about that. Rob, what do you think about that, sir?
Well, we all on the same page here. You guys kind of stole my thunder a little bit, but the Minister of Defense, I'm going to go with Reggie White for all the reasons that you guys said. My honorable mention is going to be Deacon Jones. Deacon Jones, he coined the phrase the sack.
Nice.
He invented that slap move way back when, and there's no telling how many sacks he had in his career. They didn't account for sacks back in that day. The NFL didn't start keeping it as an official stat until 1982, if I'm not mistaken. But Deacon Jones was a terror for quarterbacks back in his day. Incredible pass rusher. But we all on the same page with Reggie White. But my honorable mentions at second place will be Deacon Jones.
We'll talk about who brings more fear as well, too, because that's a whole other conversation, too, because that dude was kind of scary, to say the least, too. Let's talk about an interesting move here with LeSean McCoy. He cannot seem to let go on Chip Kelly, and he comes out and says he doesn't respect the stars. He doesn't respect the stars. I mean, he doesn't respect anybody. He doesn't respect Tim Tebow. Rob, what do you think about this, sir?
Come on, man.
Oh man! You gotta, hey, you see, we gotta deal with JQ. You gotta bring up Tim Tebow on every show.
My word.
Well, what's up with McCoy, man? What are you talking about? He doesn't respect the stars. What was he talking about? Go ahead.
Well, I think it, from the looks of it, it seems like he's telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't seem like the guy likes to deal with superstar players. He's shipping them out and wants to, you know, build his own way there in Philadelphia. And, I think we talked about this. I don't know if it was last week's show or the week before. We talked about coaches on the hot seat. I already have Chip Kelly on the hot seat based on some of the moves he's made this season already. And obviously – just on the surface, you have to believe what LeSean McCoy is saying because of some of the moves that he has made thus far. And not that Mike Vick is a great quarterback like he once was. I mean, you let him go a few years ago. You let McCoy go. You let Jeremy Maclin walk. You trade DeSean Jackson. You trade Nick Foles for a guy who's been injured and bruised his whole career. So just looking at some of the so-called stars that he have gotten rid of, to me it looks like he has no respect for those players.
JQ.
Yeah, not much more to add. It's clearly just the Chip Kelly and the Eagles as opposed to just being the Eagles. But my problem with LeSean is even if you get asked a question about Chip Kelly, at this point, dude, just let it go. It's over. You're a Buffalo Bill. Keep it moving. But not that he's not telling the truth, but I wish we could stop having the soap opera that is As the World Turns with LeSean McCoy and Chip Kelly. Let's just move on.
Wow.
Good point.
Good call, JQ. Yep. Way to end that, man. So, LeSean, you know, JQ, take his advice, man. Just move on and kind of anytime you play the Eagles, kind of, you know, stick it to him. Chip Kelly may be building a machine. Let's kind of move on to the next topic. The former quarterback for Oregon is at Marcus Mariota. And I guess, Rob, are you hearing a little chatter about the Bears moving up? That's going to drive Chip Kelly insane. But what do you hear about that, sir?
Well, there's a lot of sources going around that the Bears are highly considering moving up to possibly to draft him and possibly even trade Jay Cutler. And, you know, right now around this time of year in the NFL, right now this time of the year in the NFL, there's so many smoke screens you have to try to figure out, you know, who's telling the truth, who's not telling the truth. Teams are sending smoke signals around the league. But there are a lot of sources out there that the Bears are considering moving up. I dropped my latest mock draft, Mariota, down to number 5 to the Redskins. So I think that's about where Chicago may have to move up to go and get him. I don't see him. It looks like Tennessee is definitely not going to take Mariota at number 2. Looks like they are sold on Zach Mettenberger and they want to go defense in his draft. So I look for Tennessee to go either Leonard Williams or Dante Fowler at number 2 now. So you're going to have to get up to about number 5 to go and get Mariota. And if you think the Redskins really would take him, you may have to even go up to number 4 to possibly get him. But, you know, this Mariota thing is going to be really interesting because I could see him even falling out of the top 10 as well. But right now I have him going at number 5.
Chip Kelly's not going to let that happen. JQ.
Wow. Well, I think, you know, you guys know where I feel about this. Unless you're one player away from being, you know, a Super Bowl contender, I don't think it's worth the ammunition you're going to have to use to move up to go get them. So I wouldn't necessarily like that for the Bears because that defense is god-awful and they need all the picks they can to try to restock multiple positions. I hear what you're saying, Rob, but like you said, this is the silly season for the NFL and so many smoke screens. I don't know how you pass up Marcus and say that Zach Mettenberger, who has proven nothing, is a better prospect at this point, because they're just prospects, both of them at this point, than Marcus is. So I still think Tennessee kind of is going to try to hold him for ransom, so to speak, with that second pick. I'd be shocked. I think Washington would break dance to the podium if he fell to number 5, because I think the RG3 era is over in Washington if they could get Mariota. So,
if you look at my notes on my latest mock draft, I mean, quietly, Jay Gruden is not sold on RG3. And really, it's just a battle of him and the owner. The owner wants to stick with RG3, but Jay Gruden is not sold on RG3, and that's one of the reasons why I have Mariota going number 5. Tennessee's concern right now is the development of Marcus Mariota. A lot of teams are starting to feel like it may take a couple of years to get him ready to be a pro QB.
I don't disagree with that.
Wow.
But if you're Tennessee at number 2, I think Zach Mettenberger might still take a couple years as well. So, but who has the best upside? We talked about potential with the NBA draft. Who do you think has the better upside between Mettenberger and Mariota? I'm going to go with Mariota. So, that's just me. I hear what you're saying. But given the lack of quarterback play in the NFL and you got a guy that's played at that level for Oregon, I think Tennessee could probably sell that pick to somebody to get Mariota. I would be shocked if he fell out the top 10 unless he has some.
Don't be shocked. You heard it here first. There's a very good chance that Mariota could fall out of the top 10. It's almost a 50% chance that he will fall out.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
We will keep.
So you think
that
he passed?
Yeah, we're gonna write this date down, man. April the 7th,
yeah.
Man. Okay. Okay, Rob.
Just don't be surprised
if
it happens. I'm not saying it will, but don't be surprised. I think it's a 50-50 chance right now.
Okay,
I kind of agree with Rob, though. I think that Tennessee is sold with Zach Mecklenburg. Not that he was a second coming or anything, but I think he's definitely better than Jake Locker. But, you know, and that's not saying much, obviously. But
the thing with Mecklenburger that the guy's got a rocket for an arm. He's got one of the strongest arms in the NFL already. But he lacks mobility, and that's the thing you have to worry about with Mecklenburger. You know, Marcus Mariota would definitely give you a lot more mobility at the quarterback. But Mecklenburger can make NFL throws. I'm not sure if Mariota can make those throws just yet.
Yep. Good calls. We got about 6 minutes, guys. Rob, you want to talk about your mock draft here real quick, sir?
Well, we already covered some of it. Nothing's changed, of course, at number one. You know, we already talked about the change with Tennessee. I have them taking Leonard Williams, defensive tackle from USC. Don't be surprised if they go Dante Fowler, but I have Fowler going 3 to Jacksonville. Gus Bradley would not pass up Fowler if he's there at number 3. He's still looking for some of those pass rusher types that he had in Seattle. I have Amari Cooper going 4 to Oakland. We talked about Mariota. At the moment, I have him going 5. Number 6, I got Vic Beasley to the Jets. Vic Beasley got the quickest first step of anybody in the NFL draft. Todd Bowles, of course, is looking to revamp that defense in, with the Jets in his own image, and he wants to go with a ball control offense, so that's what he's going to be looking to do. The Bears need a weapon to replace Brandon Marshall. Right now, I have him taking Kevin White. Falcons taking Shane Ray from Missouri. The Giants taking Randy Gregory. I don't think this failed drug test is going to hurt Gregory as much as people are saying. And it looks like he still should be somewhere around that 9 to 15 range. Now, right now I have him going number 9 to the Giants. Number 10, the Rams still need some help on that offensive line. I have him taking Brandon Schreff from Iowa. Trey Wayne's best corner in the draft, 11 to Minnesota. Danny Shelton, a perfect nose tackle for the 3-4 defense from Washington, goes to Cleveland at 12. Elvin Bud Dupree to the Saints at number 13. Devontae Parker, wide receiver, Louisville to the Dolphins. The best offensive tackle in the draft, Lael Collins from LSU to San Fran. Todd Gurley is an interesting pick in this draft. I am going 16 to Houston there. Now, there's some draft experts have him going as high as number 8 to your Falcons. I don't know how you guys feel about that. Right now, I have him going to Houston at number 16. Aaron Foster is starting to slow down a little bit. I have him going to the Texans. San Diego, Melvin Gordon, the other running back from Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. They lose Ryan Matthews there. I think Gordon is in a better replacement, believe it or not. Kansas City, Malcolm Brown. Cleveland, Landon Collins, the best hard-hitting safety in the draft from Alabama. Philadelphia, Eric Flowers, offensive tackle from Miami. Cincinnati, Andrus Peat, offensive tackle from Stanford. Pittsburgh, Eric Armstead, defensive end, Oregon. Detroit, DJ Humphreys, offensive tackle guard from Florida. Arizona, Devin Funchess, tight end, Michigan. Carolina needs to desperately improve their secondary. Jalen Collins, cornerback, LSU. Baltimore needs some help at the receiver position. Jalen Strong, wide receiver, Arizona State. And wrapping up the first round here, Eddie Goldman, defensive tackle, Florida State to Dallas. Dorian Green Beckham, I tell you, this is another sleeper pick in this draft. I think he's got a good chance to be a superstar or a good chance to be a bust. We have to see which way it goes. But he's got all kinds of abilities, about 6'5", 230 pounds. Great speed, great size. He had some off-the-field trouble. Well, you know, I'm rooting for the kid. I am going number 28 to Denver, giving Peyton Manning another weapon. Eric Kendricks, inside linebacker, UCLA to Indy. Indy desperately needs some more linebacker help. Owamahabi, Adejizuma, defensive end from UCLA. I think is another sleeper pick in this draft to Green Bay. The Saints, Cameron Irvin, they still need to improve that interior offensive line for Drew Brees from Florida State. And last but not least, New England, Kevin Johnson, cornerback, Wake Forest. New England just lost both of their starting cornerbacks in free agency, Brandon Brown to the Saints and Darrell Revis to the Jets. So they're going to need some help at that position.
20 seconds each. The Dallas Cowboys need a running back. Go ahead, JQ. 20 seconds, sir.
Yeah, I can't really quibble with most of that. All those picks make a lot of sense. I'll be a little surprised if Cincinnati took the third offensive tackle available. I could see them taking Funchess, the tight end from Michigan, because they're going to probably lose Jermaine Gresham to free agency, and Tyler Eifert has not stayed healthy, so they could use a little bit more help at the tight end position. But outside of that, it looks pretty solid to me.
Wrap it up, Rob.
Next Tuesday night, people, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You don't want to miss it.
I don't know. Rob keeps putting us with these. He keeps trying to screw me over as a soccer fan. But that's okay. hey, man, we'll see you next week.
Hey, you got yourself a pass rush in the draft. That's what you wanted, right?
He's always trying to mess me over for some reason.
You desperately
That's
need a pass
need,
rusher.
We need a pass rusher, but
yes.
It's all good. We'll see you guys next week. Bye, man.
All right, man.